New World Order Disorder, a weekly broadcast hosted by Dr. Gianni Hayes. Stay tuned. Things are about to get interesting.
Okay, listeners, we're in the second half hour here of the show, and I have on Gilbert Erickson, who is an expert on the Book of Revelation, as well as on Wormwood. And if you recall, he was on last week with John DiNardo, and we were talking about Wormwood, and we're getting ready to get into that right now. But I want to say before we do that, because time will go fast as we talk about this sixth seal, which is earthquakes and various other things, as well as 144,000 witnesses or people, or actually, I should say, people are going to go out and preach the word. I do want to mention that the seventh seal is akin to silence in heaven. And we will touch on that, but I think we're going to spend a good deal of our time now on the sixth seal. He went through the first five, the white horse, the red horse, the black horse, the pale horse, the souls under the altar. And he told us what each of these meant. And the souls under the altar is not a seal that happens here on earth. It's one that happens up in heaven with the Lord, where the souls are under the altar and are waiting for the end. And the Lord says you have to wait a little bit longer. So that kind of sums up where we are with those seals. And in this last part of the show, which will go very, very fast, we are now going to talk about this sixth seal. And I want to remind you that you could call in, you can voice your opinion. We welcome that. And that is 1-800. It's a toll-free number, 1-800-569-8191. And feel free to call in at any given time, make a comment, ask a question, anything that makes you happy. And we can certainly discuss that. But let's get back to where we were. Gil, you were just finishing up with the seven seals. We're on a sixth seal now. And this is where Wormwood kind of enters big time, right?
Well, it sort of entered in a veiled form with the breaking of the fourth seal, the third and fourth seal. But you can't hardly, it's very difficult to see that. You know, the disruption in weather patterns and whatnot that causes a shortage in cereal grains. Yeah, that's probably Wormwood talking, but, you know, it's not clear enough to be sure. Then when you move to the fifth seal, then that's peculiarly the martyrdom of the Christian church at a new intense level. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I introduced the Wormwood science in the book at that point after the fifth seal because it really does set up the background information to explain the sixth seal more accurately. And so that's where I chose to put it in because it seemed like a natural fit. So anyway, in the book, those of you who order the e-book from the website, millenniumprophecy.com, I insert the Wormwood science, the descriptive science for the Wormwood dark body star right after the fifth seal. And then that sets you up with a little bit more background so that you can understand that when the sixth seal erupts, you know, it's going to produce a list of things. And they make sense with the Wormwood science as descriptive science as a backdrop to tell us the kind of stuff that's going to happen. Okay? I also put them on the website. So for those of you who want to know, you know, what is the list of events that's going to happen when the Lord breaks that sixth seal? Five have been broken, in my opinion. And when the Lord breaks the sixth seal, what is it that happens then? And for that, you have to go to Revelation 6. It describes it in verses 12 through 14. And did you want to go through those now?
Yeah, before we do, I want to ask a couple questions about this sixth seal so that, you know, I can give you the freedom then to kind of roam on it. You talk about the 144,000 in your book. and you say they are going to be marked. Of course, Christians think as soon as you say marked, it's the mark of the beast. But you're talking about the Lord has marked these 144,000. So the question is, who are they, Gil, and how do they know they are one of them, and what is that mark?
Well, the mark it doesn't tell us what the mark is. It just tells us where to look to see it. That the mark that the God the Father arranges for the angels to put on the foreheads of the young men, you will see it on their forehead. It's not going to be under their armpit. It's not going to be in the palm of their hand, on their elbow, their shoulders, their back, or whatever. On their knee, it's going to be on their forehead, prominently public display. This person belongs to me, okay? They are select. God the Father has told the angels who he wants, and then he sends them to mark these young men. They go to bed one night. The next morning they wake up. They got a mark on their forehead. And, you know, some are probably even young men still living at home. They haven't left yet because it says they're, you know, they're virgins. They haven't defiled themselves sexually. They're sexually pure or chaste. So, you know, they may be still living at home or going to college or whatever. And they go to brush their teeth. You know, they wake up and they look in the mirror and, oh, no, what in the world is that? And it looks like there's this mark, tattoo or something. The only thing it says is it's the name of God the Father and the name of God the Son. That's the only descriptors we have of it. Doesn't really tell us what language it's in, doesn't tell us what color the marks are, doesn't tell us if they change color or shape or something over time. Doesn't tell us much. Just it's the name of God the Father and the name of God the Son. Okay? It's a mark of ownership. These are the people who are specifically given the right to speak in God's name after God removes the church. I know does that help you?
It does. But, you know, a lot of people think they are converted Jews, that these 144,000 are converted Jews who have this mark.
No.
Now, okay.
No. No, the chapter 7 gives the list of the tribes that they come from.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as the Old Testament list, except that the tribe of Dan is removed. And one of Joseph's sons is counted. I mean, that Joseph is listed as a tribe. But then one of his sons is given the honor to take the place of the tribe of Dan. So instead of Dan, you see the tribe of Manasseh. Okay.
And I saw that. So why is Dan removed?
Well, Dan was the northernmost tribe in Israel. And the word is from the historians that they got sucked into idolatry so bad that even God the Father wrote them off and said, that's it for you guys. You're out of here. So when the Assyrians came in and absconded the northern tribes, and that process took place, you know, 722 and a little bit earlier, 700 plus BC, they were just dispersed and they're gone. That's it. They're gone.
Well, you know, I know that's what you say, and I've heard other people say the same thing. But here's my question is that the remnants of Dan today, that tribe, are those people also going to be written off, or can they still be saved if they came? Their ancestors came from the tribe of Dan. Do they still have hope to get into heaven?
Anybody has hope. The promises to the Jew first, but also to the Greek. Paul says there's no distinction: barbarian, Scythian, which refers to southern Russians, slave, free, nothing. Economic status, racial status, none of that means anything, okay? But the promises came through, you know, the Israelite people, in particular through the southern tribe, Judah, Benjamin, Simeon, Levi. And so, you know, he fulfills the promises to them. He does go to them first, but once that they reject him as Mashiach, as Messiah, then the gospel goes out to the rest of the world. So anybody after the cross, anybody who accepts Jesus Christ is restored to eternal relationship with God the Father. Okay?
Okay.
If it's a valid conversion that you accept the Lordship of Jesus Christ, Romans 10, 9 and 10, it doesn't matter what your tribal heritage was back, you know, X amount of thousand years ago. It doesn't matter anymore. That has been paid for. Your redemption is signed, sealed, and delivered in the blood of Christ on the cross. All you have to do is accept it. It's a gift. You can turn it down. Well, I don't want to have a relationship with the creator of the universe. Okay, you don't have to. If you don't want it, you don't have to take it. It's a gift. Okay, for by grace you've been saved through faith. And that salvation is not of yourselves. It's a gift of God. And it's not a work.
Right.
It's not something that you can do. It's something that Jesus did. God the Father and Jesus cooked this up. Jesus said, you know, if I pay this price, they're mine, right? They're yours. And I'll raise you up to prove it. Okay. And so when, you know, when he went to the cross to pay the price was paid. His mm-hmm. last word was to tetelestai. It's finished. I did it. Okay. 3 days later, God raises him up to prove that he wasn't paying for his own sin. He didn't have any. There was nothing to pay for. But he was paying for everybody else's sin. So if we accept the lordship of Jesus Christ, then God translates us, Colossians 1, God translates us from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of his beloved Son. So anybody, regardless of your tribal heritage a priori, after the cross, we're all equal. Okay? There's
okay.
only one way in. Jesus Christ has paid for that. Signed, sealed, and delivered, you know, with his blood and verified by the resurrection.
So then who are the 144,000, Gil?
Okay. They come from the Israelites and the Jews. Now remember, when the Assyrians captured the Israelites and carried them off into captivity, they were dispersed and they went, you know, dark, so to speak. Okay? They don't come back. Now, the Jews are later also taken captive by the Babylonians. All right?
Okay.
But when the Jews are taken captive, they go to Babylonia, then they, not all of them, but most of them return afterwards. And when they do, then they start things up again in Israel. But it's only Southern Kingdom Jews, and again, that's Southern Kingdom, the largest tribe was Judah, and the other tribes, the small tribes, were Simeon, Benjamin, and Levi, or Levi. Okay? So, the kingdom, the Jews stayed on for a while longer, and it wasn't until 77 AD when, 70 AD, when the Romans came in and just thrashed the city of Jerusalem, that the Jews were finally just spread around via the diaspora. Now, they were already slightly dispersed because of the captivity. Not all of them came back from Iraq. And they traveled a great deal as merchants, and they set up shop in other cities. So they were all the way up into Cappadocia, all the way down to South Africa, all the way across northern Africa, up into Spain. They were all through, you know, southern Europe. They were quite dispersed as merchants and tradesmen. They were trading back and forth. They were businessmen. Okay? So once the Romans came in and sacked the city and, you know, destroyed the temple, they actually wanted to capture and hold the temple because they wanted to make it a temple for Zeus, and some soldier flung a torch and burned the thing down. It was a mess. But the point is that they were dispersed, but they have retained some of their identity as Jews. The Israelites, the northern tribes, they were not so fortunate. They lost their identity. Now, here's where it gets interesting. In the Revelation in chapter 7, the Lord names the different tribes that are represented, and he specifically names them, okay, 7-4, sons of Israel, and it calls it out, sons of Israel. 144,000 are sealed from every tribe of the sons of Israel. Tribe of Judah, Benjamin, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, Simeon, Levi, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. Okay, they're all there. Everybody's represented, okay, but except for Dan. Manasseh is substituted in place of Dan. So the tribe of Dan is excluded, and one of Joseph's sons, the tribe of Manasseh, half-tribe of Joseph there, is inserted in its place. Now, that's quite an honor for Joseph. Manasseh didn't do that well, you know, but hey, they're still included. Now, somehow, I do not know how, but somehow, in spite of the dispersion, in spite of the captivity, you know, that Assyria imposed on them, dragging them out of Israel and hauling them 1,600 miles over, you know, toward the east and settling them there and then putting the Samaritans in their place, Samaritans in their place, you know, to maintain control of a captured population, you pull them away from their own homeland so they're a little bit more disaffected. And that was the modus operandi of the day. back in, you know, 700 B.C. Somehow there are still leftovers of these captured tribes, the northern tribes. Okay, so the sons of Reuben, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, and Zebulun and so, and Joseph, Issachar, those tribes, although they we thought that they were lost, here in the Revelation we find out that God has tracked the bloodlines through the centuries, and 2,700 years later, he has people who are, you know, counted as genetic inheritors of those bloodlines. Now, who knows? You know, they may be, I think there are going to be many of them spread around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have people, you know, there'll be marriages and whatnot the last two, three, four generations, whatever, that as far as God is concerned, that the result of that is these young men who carry the genetic markers, okay, the imprint that constitutes membership in the tribe of Zebulun and membership in the tribe of Joseph and membership in the tribe of Issachar and so on, Naphtali, Reuben. So genetically, they are Israelites, two-thirds of them. And then one-third of them are Jews, which, again, is the southern kingdom tribes, Judah, Benjamin, Simeon, and Levi, or Levi. So,
And they can't die, though, do they? My understanding was that they are there for, what, 3 days? No, that's the three witnesses. But the 144,000, I know they spread out. But I also thought that they went into hiding in Petra and then came out in...
No. These people take the place of the church. 144,000.
Okay.
The rapture of the Christian church happens in chapter 7. That's the correct place to put it. It's not a pre-trib rapture. It's a beginning trib rapture, but it is pre-judgment, as per the testimony of Paul and, you know, to the Thessalonians. So the Lord Jesus arranges to pull the church out at the last second, just before the seventh seal is broken in heaven. We're in heaven to see the breaking of the seventh seal, and there's a moment of silence as everybody considers, oh boy, here goes the lives of 2 billion people on planet Earth. What a mess. And most of these people are going to die unregenerate. You know, it's just a really, really sad time.
Well, back up. You say, we see. Does this mean those who have been professed Christians all along and never lost their faith, and so they were raptured, what, pre-trib?
No. Beginning trib. There is no pre-trib rapture.
So at the start of the tribulation period, what, the first 3.5 years?
The first 3.5 years, yeah. The church is raptured out after about 15 days.
Of the first year.
Of the first year, of the 3.5 years.
Okay, so that means none of us who are professed Christians are going to see all of this hell unfold.
No. God doesn't, you know, the church is a picture of the bride of Christ, okay? He didn't save the bride of Christ so that he could beat up on her and torture her.
But back
he values
up a minute,
the bride
Bill.
Of Christ. He promised he would. He promised that he would come back and receive the bride to himself.
Okay, let's back up a minute. And the reason I'm saying this is, you know, since antiquity, I mean, since the time of Jesus Christ, how many people have died in his name, have been persecuted, tortured, beaten, killed, and they weren't. They weren't, say, raptured. What makes us think that we in modern day, 21st century, are going to be spared what those other Christians went through?
Because the Lord promised he would do it.
Why didn't he do it for them?
God has his program. People are born, you know, he decided that this was how he was going to establish his church. Jesus said, I will build my church, the gates of hell will not be able to, you know, prevail, will not be able to stand up when my church comes assaulting, beating on the gates of hell to steal souls out of hell, people that would have gone to hell. I'm going to do it with my church. And so he, you know, sometimes he allows there to be people who get abused and martyred. For those who are martyred, there's a martyr's crown. special honor accrues to people who give their life in the service of the gospel.
I don't disagree with you on that. I guess where my question comes in, I used to be a very, very steady, firm believer in pre-trib or early trib rapture. I really believe that. But I've come to think now that, you know, as much as I would love that, Gil, there's nothing I would love more than at the beginning of the tribulation that we get taken out.
I've got good news for you.
Well, but, you know, I'm saying I'm not so sure I can believe that. I think that Christians may go through this persecution, and who lasts? Who still is a professing Christian after they've been tortured and whatever else? They're going to go to heaven. I'm not saying other people aren't going to go to heaven, but I'm saying I don't think it's going to be that easy for us. I hope I'm wrong. I hope you're right, Gil.
Okay, well, I have to tell you you're wrong, and I hate to say I'm right, but it's not an ego issue, Janie. Okay? The issue is that it's a promise from God himself. Okay, 1 Corinthians 15. Behold, I show you a mystery. Not everybody is going to die. Okay, converse. Okay, some people are going to die, but not everybody is going to die. Okay? However, everybody will be changed. Okay? In a moment, in the blink of an eye, twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, and that's the trump that is sounded on Rapture Day. Rapture Day, or Removal Day, is when God comes to collect. The Lord Jesus comes and collects his church. It's from the same word as rape, the same word as rapt, the same word, you know, it's a Latin term, rapiri, to grab or snatch or to rip away forcibly, okay? Jesus comes up and he literally rips the Christian church out of the hands of Satan and the demons. And Satan has principality rights over planet Earth. And so the Lord Jesus comes in and these are mine. I'm going to take them now. Gotcha. And he just helps himself to those who are still living. All those who have died in faith are resurrected. And according to, you know, Paul's testimony in Thessalonians, they go first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them to meet the Lord in the air. And so shall we ever be with the Lord. So those who have died in faith are resurrected first. They go first. And they get their new bodies. Eternal bodies like his, the ones that, you know, that don't age and the hair doesn't fall out and the teeth don't fall out, you don't go blind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then those who are alive and remain are changed and they get their new bodies. They have to wait until the others have been resurrected and collected, and then the living are the last to go. That's Rapture Day. There's a series of trumpet blasts and so forth, and then you have this removal of the church. Now, I go into that very thoroughly in the book. Those of you who are listening to this show, you might want to get a book, you know, download a copy of the book, and you can order it off the website, and go through this because it fits very, very tightly. All the scriptures synchronize very well. And on Rapture Day, those who have died in faith are collected, and those who are still living are collected. No stragglers left behind. No real believers are left behind. If you believe in the Lord Jesus Christ with a valid faith, as far as God the Father is concerned, you have to go because he's promised to come and collect the church. He said he would do that. So on Rapture Day, that's what he does.
Is he not taking those who he raptured and taking them to war with him against Satan?
That comes at the end of the tribulation 7 years later.
Okay.
Battle of Armageddon. It says he comes back with the armies of heaven. We don't even actually know how many star systems are going to be involved in putting together the armada of power when he comes back to take physical control.
Say that again, star
system?
Gil, say that again, star systems. What do you mean by
that? We don't have any idea. When it says armies of heaven, it's plural. Armies of the, how many star systems are going to be involved? We have no idea how far and how wide God the Father as creator, how far and how wide his influence goes. We don't even know how far the influence of the Lord Jesus Christ goes as co-creator, Colossians 1. His comings and goings are from eternity of old, the Old Testament says. Okay? We don't know how far back this goes. We don't know how many star systems, how many other kinds of people, races and whatnot know the Lord and serve and, you know, and honor him. God the Father is creator. He's creator of heaven and earth, not just the solar system of our little, you know, our little solar system.
Okay, now you bring up a point that every time somebody comes on and talks about life elsewhere, it makes me ask this question because my listeners ask it to me. How can we talk about life elsewhere when the Lord only talks about earth in the Bible and he talks about man in his image? So, how, you know, life on other planets is not A, earth, and B, they're likely not going to look like humans anyway, so they're not in the image of man, right?
No.
Ah.
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 In the image of God created he them, male and female created he them. Okay, created he him, male and female created he them. What is the image of God? What's the imprimatur, the image of God? What does it boil down to? Physical stature? Probably not. Color of hair? Probably not. Color of eyes? Probably not. Color of skin? Probably not. What is it? It's the possession of sentient, self-aware mind, will, and emotions. That's the image of God. The animals do not bear that image. They don't have much in the way of mind. Sometimes they have a lot of emotion. Okay? And if you have cats, you understand about cats have a lot of will. You just don't have a lot of brains to go along with it.
Yeah, I have cats.
All right, well, you understand.
I have to
so
agree.
They don't bear the full image of God, mind, will, and emotions. Sentient beings. That's the image of God. He actually imposes upon our soul a pattern that is patterned after himself. And when he sent the angels out to spread life through his universe, they took that pattern. They were probably themselves also patterned the same way with mind, will, and emotions.
So you're saying there could be life in outer space that look like us, even
no.
though the Lord talked about
No, they would be on planetary
Earth?
Systems around other star systems in space. But there are probably not that many people living in space. Very cold, very dark. Okay?
Okay.
We don't really know how big the universe is. That's a problem in astronomy. I mean, the current theory is that the universe is 13.7 billion years old, and the problem is that there's some structures out there that look like they're more like 50, maybe 70 billion years old. So we really don't have an idea how old the universe is. And the double horizon problem confirms our, you know, our suspicions that we don't know everything yet. We just don't get it. We're not sure about everything. We don't know it all yet. Okay, so this could go back a long ways. And we don't know how many star systems there are where there are people. You know, there's one investigator claims that black people here on planet Earth came from Sirius, a planet near that the dog star, Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S.
And you realize that
there are planarian and that, Asian people came from a third star system. So we're an amalgam of other star systems going way back. We have no idea. And again,
crazy people who believe that we came from reptiles. There are reptilians out there.
But there might be reptilians. We know we have reptiles here on planet Earth. What would happen if you had reptiles that were sentient creatures that had mind, will, and emotions? But they were packaged in reptilian bodies.
Okay, so you're saying that you're one of those...
You've got a certain amount of physical reality to be, you know, a little flexible there. They can come in various different shapes or sizes, colors, styles, okay? But if they bear mind, will, and emotions, sentient creatures with mind, will, and emotions, that's the creativity of God showing through. We have no idea how many different kinds of peoples and races there might be and how many different star systems. Shoot, we don't even know how many universes there are. We really just don't know for sure. You know what I mean? A lot of unanswered questions yet. What we do know is that God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ are the creators, if you want, of heaven and earth. That's the good news. God is inviting us to join his eternal family. Now, I don't care what planet you come from, that's good news. that's gone.
Well, it is good news, and I sure hope you're right. There's nobody who wants you to be more right than I am. So, you know, but let's go to Wormwood because, you know, we only have less than 20 minutes, Gil. I'm not even sure where the time went. This particular seal, the sixth seal, talks about earthquakes and whatnot. And in your book, you talk a lot about the Indonesian Sumatra earthquake. And I was just spellbound by that. I mean, not going into Cartesian systems and many of the other things that you have discussed, epileptical forms and elliptical forms, rather, and, you know, those things. So just the bare bones on Wormwood. NASA, you say NASA knows that this particular body is out there. They're not coming clean with it. John DiNardo agrees with you. I know personally, and I've said this to my listeners, that I was at a party, and there was a NASA officer at that party who had several drinks, and I waited until he had a sufficient number. And when I went over, I did. And I went over and I talked to him, and I said to him, is there really a Planet X? Have you heard that? And he said, oh, yeah, I've heard that. I said, does it exist? He says, yeah, we don't really talk much about it. So, I better go. That's exactly how he did it. So, you know, firsthand, I had a guy tell me it's out there. They apparently don't know a lot about it, and they're not really talking about it.
Well, apparently they do know more than they're talking about. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they have been tracking Planet X, which is not a planet. This is Wormwood, the dark body star. It's a brown dwarf star, T-series, L-series, brown dwarf. It doesn't have enough diameter to attract enough charge from the plasma space, the energy of space, to light up and shine like a red dwarf or a yellow dwarf. Our sun is a yellow dwarf. It's too small. So it's a dark body star. Okay? It is not coming into the solar system. It is part of the solar system. For all practical purposes, it's a large iron cannonball, somewhere between the size of Saturn and Jupiter. Could even be larger than Jupiter. We don't know. And it orbits at a long elliptical orbit, which is the plane of its orbit is at 90 degrees to the ecliptic plane. And since it's a body in space that's orbiting something, it will also spin, like all stars do. Stars spin. And planets spin. And moons around planets spin, and so on. So it will also spin. Well, if it's a body that big and that heavy, chip off the old block of the sun itself, it's going to throw a hellacious, bodacious EM field as well as a really nasty gravitational field. So it's a electromagnetic gravitic field is big. It's heavy. And it's going to produce some effects because of it, because of the spin on its axis, which would be perpendicular to its elliptical plane. Orbital plane, okay? But it's a brown dwarf star. It's the sun's binary companion. Remember, 65% of the stars in our sector of the galaxy are binaries. They don't have to be equal, just binary, right? Well, if 65% of the stars are binary, then that means there's 65% odds that our sun is also a binary. The majority of the stars are. We may find out it's more than that later. But the more stars we find out that they're binaries, then that means there's more stars that we have to, you know, that's a higher percentage. Turns out a lot of them have brown dwarf stars as their binary companion. They're not all equally divided, and they're not all visible. But you can't see the brown dwarf stars unless you have infrared capability. They do show up in infrared. Okay? So
okay.
That being said, then the majority odds, 65% odds, say that the sun is also binary. Where is its binary companion? Well, we can't see it. Okay, then we know we're looking for a brown dwarf. Where's the brown dwarf? Okay? Well, they found it. 1982, they located it. 1983, they confirmed it. And then they went dark, and they didn't want to talk about it anymore, which is what he said after three or four drinks. They haven't talked about it much. Yeah, they keep that very QT. Because somebody put two and two together and realized, oh, shoot, this is Wormwood of the Bible. Darn. And then there's the Colburn Bible. And then there's Plato's account from the priests of Egypt. this thing comes around every once in a while. It makes things very messy when it gets here. It's big. It's heavy. It's nasty. It destroys civilizations. And that's why they don't want to talk about it.
All right. So this thing has already been sending us some woes, has it not? I mean,
it has.
We talked about Indonesia, and you had said that was a 15-foot tsunami, and that it would not be surprising if the East Coast, I guess, of the United States got hit with a 1,000-foot wave tsunami, or 2,000, or 3,000. I mean, what are we talking about here damage-wise? And my understanding, this brown dwarf is star is not going to hit Earth at all, but it is its fields of radioactivity, its fields of, I guess, gravitational pull and whatnot are going to have massive destructive abilities. Is that true?
That's correct. Wormwood itself, the star itself, doesn't crash into us, because if it did, Earth wouldn't even be, you know, a fly speck on its surface. If the entire Earth crashed into Wormwood, Wormwood wouldn't even know it had been hit, because Earth is so tiny compared to Wormwood and so light compared to Wormwood. Wormwood is really big and it's really heavy. It's probably a minimum of 7 or 8 times Jupiter's mass, and it could easily be 10 or 12, maybe 15 times or 20 times Jupiter's mass, depending on how big it is. It's a big iron cannonball. It has the same core as the core of the sun. The sun has an iron core. All right. When Wormwood comes in on its perihelion maneuver, this long, stretched-out ellipsoid pattern that it makes, it cuts through the ecliptic plane, arcs up over the sun, then cuts back down through the ecliptic plane, and heads back down to deep space, southern hemisphere skies. Okay? Where it cuts through the ecliptic plane, when it comes up through, it's called the node of right ascension. What it does is it cuts through the ecliptic plane at right ascension 18, about halfway between the center line of the main, the orbital center line of the main asteroid belt and the orbital center line of Jupiter. So that puts it out about 3.95 to 4.0 Earth radiuses. Okay? On right ascension 18. That's where it's going to come up through. It arcs up over the sun, then comes back down through the ecliptic plane, the same distance on the other side, only now it's going outbound on right ascension 6. So it comes up the line that would, run between Sagittarius and Scorpius, right ascension 18, up through the ecliptic plane, up over the sun, back down on the other side, and that would be closer. If you had to pick a star, it would be Betelgeuse, which is Orion's right armpit star. Orion faces us as a constellation. So Orion's right armpit star, the variable red giant, is pretty close to right ascension 6 and goes out on that side. So it comes in between Sagittarius and Scorpius, up over the sun, and then back out on the Orion side, and then down through the ecliptic plane, and then back down toward southern skies, deep space. Okay, that's the orbit of Wormwood.
All right.
Wormwood is big. Jupiter is 317 times the mass of Earth. And this thing is probably about 7 or 8 times the mass of Jupiter, at a minimum. It could be 15 or 20 times the mass of Jupiter. The truth is we really just don't know how big it is because NASA doesn't want to talk to us.
But shouldn't somebody, I mean, some other maybe random or rebellious astronomer, you would think he'd come out or she'd come out with reports saying, hey, NASA isn't telling us, you guys, this thing is a monster out there, and this is what it's going to do to us.
Eventually they will, especially when the amateur astronomers locate it. The main thing is that I have made it public now, ever since that interview last year with George Norrie on Coast to Coast, we made it public that it's coming in on right ascension 18 from the southern hemisphere skies. At least now the amateurs, if they have infrared equipment, they know where to look. Or if you have those infrared goggles, you know, and you happen to live in, Australia, New Zealand, Chile, Argentina, South Africa. If you live in the southern hemisphere and you've got the right equipment with infrared capability, you can look over in that section and search the southern hemisphere skies, and you'll see it in the infrared. And to know that it's a brown dwarf, you turn the infrared feature off, and you look only at the optical stuff. It'll disappear. Turn the infrared back on, there it is again. Turn the infrared back off, disappears. So it only shows up in the infrared part of the spectrum. And it'll stay that way until it gets close enough to reflect the light rays of the sun. Then it becomes visible. So it starts out being a little hazy, you know, barely visible, and it becomes progressively more visible and more visible. Finally, it comes screaming overhead, and this sucker's huge, and by then we've got massive upset here on Earth. Okay.
Okay, let's talk about massive upset here on Earth. You had said in your book, and I do want to just read this one thing, that there is one other way that wormwood causes massive destruction besides the gravitational damage it can do to Earth's tectonic plates. The ancient civilizations were deathly afraid of the specific time that it made its crossing from southern hemisphere into the northern hemisphere. Now, I know you talk here about methane gas, and maybe you could touch on that before we discuss then a little bit more fully what we should start expecting to see, and when it's all said and done, what will be the final picture look like. So go ahead, Gil.
Okay, wormwood has a methane atmosphere. The sun has an atmosphere which operates in glow mode. We call that the photosphere. That's what causes the yellow, the light that we can see. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Earth all have atmospheres. They might be a little bit thin, like Mars, or a little bit heavier, like Earth, but they have atmospheres. Well, wormwood, just like Jupiter, will have an atmosphere. But because wormwood is a warm body, not a hot body, its atmosphere probably will not have polar ice. However, it can pick up in this rusty, dusty disk that it has, that it forms. It can pick up ice, methane ice, from out of the Oort cloud or from the, you know, the Kuiper belt and so on, where there appears to be a lot of ice, methane ice, regular ice, and so on. And it can just help itself to that with its gravitational field. And it can grab that stuff, and along with, you know, stuff that it grabs out of the asteroid belt and space junk and rocks and, you know, all sorts of stuff, and it starts slinging this stuff around on its equatorial plane. That's where the node rings will be. That's where the rusty, dusty disk will be. But its atmosphere will be huge. It will extend way out, and it carries a massive EM charge. So it's going to have a methane atmosphere. It may very well be that it's capable of throwing some of that methane atmosphere or very high tonnages of methane ice that it has collected from space, okay, from the Kuiper belt, the Oort cloud, whatever. And it throws that stuff to Earth, and it, you know, the revelation says one-third of the Earth is incinerated by this. So this methane atmosphere doesn't hurt Mars because all it's got is carbon dioxide. Wouldn't hurt Jupiter because it already has a methane atmosphere. When it comes to Earth, Earth has nitrogen and oxygen. You throw methane in from outside, you've got a fire hazard. And that's why the revelation describes in Chapter 8 that one-third of the Earth is incinerated when this thing comes cruising across, you know, overhead. It's a mess. It can throw methane ice, hail and fire mixed with blood. Stuff comes screeching down. It can, you know, probably a Venn diagram would show that we have an intersection of its atmosphere with ours for at least a little part of its transit. So it can just get very, very destructive and very messy. It has all kinds of effects depending on where we are at the time when it comes cruising through. Okay? Mm-hmm. We don't sit in one position in our orbit. We orbit around the sun. But this thing cuts up at 90 degrees to that orbital pattern. And it throws ice, it throws rocks, it throws iron oxide dust, it throws all kinds of alkaline dust and garbage. It's just messy. Really, really messy and destructive. And a third of the Earth is incinerated.
Well, I know that's the bottom line there, but what, besides Sumatra, well, if you went way back, and I know you believe that Atlantis was a civilization that once existed, but that it too was destroyed, but We're very familiar with the Indonesian earthquake and the 250,000 lives, if not more, that were lost from both the earthquake and the tsunami. Mm-hmm. What other signs are we going to start seeing, or have we been seeing? I know there's been an increase in earthquakes. Is that just a fluke, or is this some of the things we should be aware of?
Yeah, let's deal with that now. That's the sixth SEAL event list is what we should deal with.
Right.
Okay. When Wormwood closes in, according to the Revelation, chapter 6, verses 12 through 14, the sign that appears is an event list, a list of things that will happen. And it gives us it describes, and every one of them are classic Wormwood signature stuff. Okay? Let's go through that now. I looked, and he broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth made of hair. The whole moon became like blood. Stars of the sky fell to the earth as a fig tree cast its unripe figs that shake by a great wind. The sky is split apart like a scroll when it's rolled up, and every mountain and island moved out of their places. All right, I'll go over the list. Number one, a great earthquake. Well, this thing has sweet points in its rusty, dusty disk. That's where a lot of the heavy concentrations of space dust and rocks and methane ice and junk, you know, space junk, is located. Where the sweet points are for the sun, that's where the planets are located. Where the sweet points are for the planets, that's where the moons are located. Well, this thing is going to have the same thing. And it can gravitationally and electromagnetically grip stuff as it's going through the Oort cloud, as it cuts through the parts of the Kuiper belt, and as it cuts through the asteroid belt. I mean, it just helps itself to this stuff. Okay? So the first thing it does is it grabs a hold of us and it just shakes us. And that's what happened, in my opinion, that's what happened for in Sumatra, December of 2004. When that quake hit, it was a 9.0 earthquake, and the island just kept rolling and bucking and heaving for 10 minutes. Well, what happens if this thing gets up close and personal and hits us with an inner node ring, and we start bucking and rolling and heaving for 10 or 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour? You can imagine how destructive it will be. Okay? So a major earthquake, that's the first thing on the list. The sun became black as sackcloth made of hair.
Well, do you think the Sumatra one was the major earthquake they're talking about, or is this the one they're talking about at Mount Olive?
No, this is what's coming. In Revelation 6, it hasn't happened yet. The Sumatra earthquake was a heads-up for us to pay attention. Look, this is what can happen. And then you had that terrible killer tsunami that happened after that, okay, because it was able to shift things. We'll get to that in a minute. The second thing on the list, the sun became black as sackcloth made of hair, which reflects that there's massive amounts of tectonic activity, especially at the plate edges. And you get a lot of volcanic activity, which throws massive amounts of tonnages of ash plume into the upper atmosphere, and it blocks out the light of the sun. All right. And we talk about, you know, black hair, like goat hair or hair from Middle Eastern people. And it refers to it just blocks it out because there's so much dust and junk in the air. The whole moon became like blood. Wormwood has a rusty iron oxide disk as it lofts pebbles and debris and stuff from its volcanic activity, and static charge carries that up into the, you know, and creates a disk like a saw blade at its equator. And when that intrudes between the Earth and the Moon, it's as if all of a sudden you've got a filter out there that makes the Moon turn red for no good reason, except that's a Wormwood signature. Okay, the stars in the sky fell to the Earth. No, that's not stars hitting the Earth. That's, you know, we're talking about meteorite events. That stuff comes streaking in. It's brighter than a star for a little while. And then it hits the Earth. Bang! And you get a, you know, crater or something. So it's not stars. It's, you know, meteorite events. And that's the fourth item on the list. The fifth item gets a little bit flowery, but you have to pick it apart. The sky was split apart like a scroll when it's rolled up. And the way I read that is that we're looking at a pyroclastic explosion similar to Mount St. Helens or Vesuvius or Etna. Okay? Krakatoa. Massive eruption where it blows off a big chunk of mountain. And when St. John is there observing and he hears the concussion, it just strikes him, you know, bang, it hits so hard that it just looks like the sky is splitting apart. It feels like it. But then he looks up and he sees the formation of the mushroom cloud, and it has a tucking action when viewed from underneath. And it looks like a scroll that you've let go of, and it rolls itself back up, and it has that tucking action underneath. So he gives you a first-century descriptor of a pyroclastic explosion, similar to Mount St. Helens, massive concussion, and then that, you know, mushroom cloud as he looks up at it. It's a very, very accurate description, okay, for a pyroclastic explosion, if you look at it that way. Every mountain and island removed out of their places. We found out from the Sumatra earthquake in 2004, December 2004, that when the 10 minutes worth of quaking and shaking were finished, the entire island had been moved 110 feet from its prior position. Now, this is where the Sumatra thing figures in. Now, if there's any GPS satellites left up, we can measure that. I mean, they can measure right down to 10 centimeters. So it'll be real easy to see if there's been tectonic shifting on the Earth. Okay? If they're not available, then we'll have to go back and do it the old-fashioned way with surveying equipment. But we would be able to determine eventually that, you know, the geography, the tectonic plates has shifted and moved. This thing really shakes things up. So every island and mountain are moved out of their places. So things, the tectonic plates are moving, they're shifting because we're really being blasted, earthquake and stuff. Okay. I throw this next one in as a freebie. It is not mentioned in the Revelation list in verses 12 through 14. But the next thing that I add is, well, if you've got islands that are shifting around, mountains that are shifting around, there have to be tsunami events that generate from that. So I put that in as a seventh, as a freebie. But it is not listed in the Revelation. It's actually only casually mentioned by Dr. Luke in his gospel. Men's hearts failing them for fear at the roaring of the waves. Well, if you're standing on the beach in Miami Beach or something, and you see a 400-foot wave or a 1,000-foot wave come rolling in over the top of you, I think you're going to be scared just before you die. And 15, 20 seconds later, after that thing hits, you're going to be ground into hamburger. So it's going to be very scary stuff, even if you only have 100-foot waves or 25-foot waves that hit coastlines. About 50% of the world's population lives within 25 feet of the high tide water line of coastlines. Half the world's population is exposed. Well, what happens when you get mountains and islands moving around, shifting out of their places with all this shake, rattle, and roll? I think you're going to have some horrible tsunami events that are just going to be extremely destructive.
You're talking 1,000 feet tsunamis.
Well, the dark body star has actually reversed the rotation of the Earth in times past. This actually happened several times that we know of. Instead of the sun rising in the east and setting in the west, it rises in the west and sets in the east. Then it turned it back around again the other way. Then it turned it back around again, and then turned it back around so that it now rises in the east and sets in the west. So this thing can stop the rotation of the Earth. If the Earth just stops its rotation for even, you know, like half a day or something, the accretion of water at the equator in the torrid zone will slosh back toward the temperate zones because the centrifugal force tends to congregate the water toward the equator. You'll have a 400-foot tsunami rolling in.
Is that going to be on the east coast of the United States, Gil?
It'll be everywhere that's in the temperate zones if the Earth's rotation stops for just a little while.
Well, you've been a wonderful guest, and listeners, you want to tune in next week for Bill Weiss and his wife Annette on his 23 Minutes in Hell. And Gil, I cannot thank you enough. Get his book, TheMillenniumProphecy.com, and you will hear everything he just told me and much more. Thanks, Gil. Good night, everybody. God bless.
All right.